Hey everybody, this is Dom from the Dr. Dom podcast.
And this is Eric Blake of the South Carolina Beer Scouts.
And today we're going to be trying something a little different.
Yeah, we're going to try to be entertaining this time, right?
we'll see if we can make that happen.
No, just kidding. I've actually listened to like five or six episodes and I've enjoyed thoroughly.
So so Eric and I are former roommates and I'm up visiting.
Back in the good old days.
Yeah. So I'm visiting South Carolina, went to our friend's wedding today, and we decided that it would be fun if we try to like a cross cast, like a hybrid between our two podcasts. So I occasionally, when I feel motivated, do the Dr. Dom mostly sports podcast and some weird news, and Eric does.
We pretty much focus on South Carolina craft beer, although of course we do scout out our neighboring states. We did a special on Asheville a few weeks ago where we just featured some beers from Asheville in North Carolina, and Dom kindly brought some local Florida beers for us to try, stuff that's not really available on the shelves here in South Carolina. I can go ahead and introduce our beers.
Yeah. So I braved the risks of packing liquids in your checked luggage because you can't carry it on with TSA rules, but we managed to get it here.
They did arrive successfully.
So of course in Eric's podcast they will sample usually three or four South Carolina beers and talk about all the interesting facts behind them.
Yeah. Oh, actually, the pattern we've taken is that we'll do two or three South Carolinian beers, but then we'll bring an extra one from out of state that we jokingly call a carpetbagger, and it'll be our carpetbagger's choice of the episode.
Nice.
Now, of course, in this case, since we'll just be featuring Florida beers exclusively, we won't throw around any.
Since I'm invading your show, we're going to use my state's beer. You want to go ahead and introduce what I brought here?
Sure. Yeah. So we've got something from Coppertail Brewing Company, which is one that I did not know of before. Where are they located at?
It's in the greater Tampa area. I forgot the exact
outside city. I see here. Yeah, Tampa.
It is Tampa.
Tampa, okay. Florida, yep. And then we've got Funky Buddha Brewery, which I do know of Funky Buddha. I've not had anything from them, but they have a reputation for exceptional beer, and they are from Oakland Park, Florida.
Which is near Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
And those are really the two, to the best of my limited beer knowledge, which is really only come from listening to your podcast. Those are the two main like epicenters of Florida brewing. Most craft beers you can buy from Florida are either from Tampa or from Miami, more or less.
Yeah, Tampa definitely has a lot of heavy hitters. I know Cigar City Brewing Company is one that's recently kind of expanded into the South Carolina market here.
We saw them at the Craft and Draft at the after party.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
The wedding. Yeah, they actually had it was a brown ale. I can't remember the name, but they had cans of that at the mostly South Carolina craft beer store we were at.
And I think I've seen Funky Buddha on tap occasionally at like World of Beer here in Columbia, or maybe at Crafty Draft out in Lexington, but I definitely have never seen Coppertail before, so that'll be a nice different one
to try.
Yeah.
All right, so before we get into drinking one of these fantastic beers, hopefully, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the things that you look for people who haven't listened to South Carolina Beer Scouts podcast. When you're pouring the beer, looking at it, what kind of traits are you analyzing?
Sure. Okay. Well, I guess we can do this live. For example, let's go ahead and take our Coppertail Night Swim Porter. For starters, if you're going to be drinking more than one beer in like a session, normally you'll pick your less hoppy and less bitter beers first and kind of work your way up, because it can kind of impact your palate. If you have like a really strong IPA or something that's got a lot of hoppy, bitter flavors to it, then if you're trying to drink something like light and sweet afterwards, it's just not going to taste right, and it will impact your experience negatively. But I guess, for example, labeling and like the appearance of the bottle itself is an initial factor that's kind of cool to appreciate. I mean, breweries these days are really getting creative and imaginative with their labeling, and I mean, it's honestly a factor in the beer you choose off the shelf sometimes. I mean,
sometimes there's a lot of beers. I know that when I went to the Total Wine, actually, in Riviera, Florida. It has mostly wine, but they have a Florida beers section. And I knew that I was going to get a Funky Buddha because some friends had recommended it, and I didn't know what else I was going to pick. And part of it was that like some of the packaging stands out, and that's like I don't have time to look at every single one of them.
It's a real factor, and It's a nice idealistic thought that, you'll judge the product purely based on the merits of its, you know, its taste and stuff. But honestly, packaging matters, and a beer that's more eye-catching and more appealing, you know, aesthetically in its presentation will will probably sell better. And honestly, there's something about having a nice bottle. I myself actually collect bottles just for fun. At last count, I had like 176 different beer bottles. I actually posted this on our South Carolina Beer Scouts Facebook page recently. So
I can hopefully post a link to the picture in the show notes on SoundCloud.
So
you can check it out. It is very, very cool.
That's 3 years of collecting. So yeah. Actually 4 years of collecting now. So yeah, I mean, the packaging is definitely a factor. And also practically, you know, a brown bottle such as this one will keep your beer better protected and better preserved than like a clear glass bottle or even like a green glass bottle. We actually, in our most recent episode we just released, we had an extensive little segment where we talked all about the pros and cons of different packaging and how cans are increasingly becoming more mainstream for craft beers. I mean, it's funny because, you know, usually when people think of canned beer, they think of, you know, the cheap Budweiser or Michelob Ultra stuff that you'll get at a gas station sort of stuff.
But
more breweries are realizing, you know, cans have a benefit that they're completely the opposite of translucent.
Opaque.
Yeah. So it keeps all the light out, which can damage your beer. So, and before I spend 20 minutes talking about labeling, I will say another thing that I like and always look for is when a brewery includes like a date of when it was bottled or if there's a best by date, because not every can of beer has that. And sometimes beers can sell on the shelf for a long time and you might not realize it. You might pick a beer off the shelf and then taste like, oh my gosh, this is must be like, you know, a year old or something. And
oh wow, this went bad 3 months ago. No, I'm just kidding.
It can happen. There was
good till the end of November.
Just a few weeks ago, I was shout shopping and I found a beer that it was like bottled in like May 2016. Like, so it's literally been sitting on a shelf at room temperature for a year, and it's like there's no way it can still be good. This one is definitely within date. This is best by November, so we've got plenty of time.
So now I guess we can crack it open.
Yes.
What are we gonna look for when we pour the beer?
Well, for fun, if it's a really strong and flavorful beer, you can usually even get a whiff of the aroma the second the cap pops off, and it's kind of it's a nice little greeting, so to speak. I smell a little bit of coffee already.
Yeah.
So
I always pour down the side of the glass, just like chemistry lab.
So. Yeah, so it doesn't get overly foamy or splattery. Okay, so now that it's poured, I guess I always like to make sure that there's a nice proportion of foam to like the actual body of the beer, because if there's no foam, it could mean that, you know, it's undercarbonated or it's just kind of, if it's too warm, you might get too much foam because the beer has just warmed up and it's more active, versus if it's, okay, this is at a good temperature because it's just like a good proportion of foam to the actual like liquid part of the beer. And like a nice color contrast, like this is very dark, but then it's got a kind of khaki color on top. So I guess it's to me, at least it's aesthetically pleasing that it's got a nice proportion and a nice color. And I just realized I poured the whole thing into one glass.
I was going to ask.
Totally didn't realize that. Hold on, I can fix that.
You're going to split it up.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Totally was
lost. I thought maybe that's what you always do or something.
No.
That's funny.
Well, at least we realized it. Gosh, I might be sitting here drinking a whole beer. Oh, sorry, Dom, my bad. So also, I guess on that note, usually when you're splitting it up, you may not get the same appearance to it. Now, you see, even split up, you've got a nice kind of like color contrast to it, because otherwise, if there's no foam on top, it's just like one monotonous color. So
I does have a strong coffee scent.
Yeah, so definitely, I personally like beers that are very intense, like whether it's, you know, if it's the color, if it's like a nice, thick, intense color, and if it's a nice, you know, intense aroma, which this definitely seems to be on the stronger side. Definitely some kind of some coffee and chocolate. Yeah, it's actually kind of...
I like it, but I can't really break it down the way that you guys do.
It's kind of a sweet chocolate almost. It's like
It's definitely like, to me, it tastes like a hint lighter than... like a stout or like a Guinness or something.
Definitely. It's a little lighter on the palate and not really bitter. It's actually mostly kind of a sweeter chocolate, which you can have dark chocolate, which can be more bitter, than you can have like a sweet chocolate flavor that's sweeter.
Yeah.
And this definitely falls more on that side. So
I wonder if there's anything on the bottle that says something like that, because
there's
generally... So I've noticed that just a trend when I was in the store and reading some bottles, like... Florida beer, I think, has a character of being, you know, kind of warm. Like, Florida's, you know, warm and sunny.
Yeah.
And I think they tend to be a little bit on, like, the sweeter side. There's a lot of things that have, like, citrus notes. I don't know how common. I don't think this one does, but, like, the IPA.
No, I know what you're saying. In a warmer climate, you don't want a thick, heavy, roasty beer all the time. Usually you're going to want something that's lighter and refreshing and kind of crisp,
right,
tropical.
The bottle says style porter, obviously. Dark and luxurious, rich and roasty, with a hint of chocolate.
And then this is interesting. It also says it pairs perfectly with barbecue brisket.
How do you determine that?
I mean, I'm sure they probably
did. They just eat lots of food while drinking this beer?
I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm sure, like, when whoever the brewmaster, whenever he's coming up with the recipe, he's like, you know, I had a porter one time at, like, a barbecue, and I'm like, yeah, it was really good. I want to have something that tastes like that. So I guess that on that note, just to go back to my initial comments on, like, packaging, you know, there are some beers out there that it's just a can, there's no information, but then there's plenty of beers out there where they'll list, like, even, like, the types of hops they use, the types of barley or malt or whatever else, or, like, infused with lemon peel or something. Like, you know, a bottle can be very descriptive and will make it that much more appealing that you kind of know what you're going to be drinking, and versus kind of flying in blind. And this one even has a food pairing on it, which is...
It's very common with wine,
yeah,
is my understanding.
Yeah. Right? And honestly, with the way craft beer is going, it's becoming something like that's just as sophisticated, where you can pair certain beers with different foods and so on and so forth. So that on that note, when you're picking a beer, if you know that, oh, I may love an IPA, but I'm going to be having something that's really spicy and it's not going to pair with like a crazy bitter food or something like that. So
interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So I've noticed that the temperature of the beer here, this isn't ice cold. This
right.
isn't like something that... I mean, like, we had it in the fridge and it was out for a few minutes, but it's not...
It's actually been about a solid 15 minutes since I took it out of the fridge and brought it up here. It's
So does that affect the flavor?
It certainly does. I'm sure there's a chemical reason behind this, but, you know, the colder something is, the less active, you know, the molecules and the chemicals and things.
Right.
That
less kinetic energy.
Yeah. So... And that translates to less flavor. And also the fact that if it's ice cold, you know, it's going to actually do the same thing for your tongue. Your tongue is going to be numb and you're not going to be able to, like, taste things. It's just going to, like, overwhelm your senses. So a beer will definitely have better flavor as it warms up some. Now, not too much. You don't want it at, like, room temperature. But generally, a beer that's been out of the fridge, like, if your fridge is at ice cold, you know, like, 35, 40 degrees, you might want to give it 10-15 minutes to warm up, so that it's like more in the 40 to 45 degree range. Like a solid, it's like it doesn't have to be warmer than that, but kind of in the 40 to 45 50 degree range, that's where it's warm enough that you can get more flavor from it, and there's more complexity that can come out of the beer. And on this note, in my experience, sometimes a hoppier beer will if you're drinking like an IPA ice cold, you might actually get more just harsh bitterness on your tongue without kind of the accompanying flavor, that which is why most people like an IPA, because they're very flavorful. They have a lot of like sweet tropical kind of flavors, or like piney flavors, which if you're drinking it ice cold, you're going to kill off the good part of the flavor and all you're going to taste is like that overwhelming bitterness that a lot of people don't find appealing. So
what does that tell us about the commercial beers that always tell you to drink them ice cold?
Well that's because honestly the average macro brew, you know, something from Anheuser-Busch or Miller Coors or these big companies, you know, they're not designed to taste flavorful. I mean, it's basically, I mean, especially like the light beers, they're not much more than, you know, corn and grain infused water. And like, if it's ice cold, you won't be able to notice the difference. In the second it gets any warmer than that, we realize, oh wait, this actually doesn't taste that good. And
yeah, I've definitely encountered that, like with stuff like Miller Lite that I only drink if I have to.
Yeah, so it's like they almost have to like not let you taste their beer in order for it to sell, because otherwise you'd realize, you know, it just doesn't taste that good. And so yeah, if you don't want to taste your beer, keep it ice cold. If you want to actually taste more, let it warm up a bit, not room temperature, but 10 minutes out of the fridge. Or if you're more hardcore like me, I have a separate beer fridge that I set to about 45 degrees, like a cellar temperature.
Very good. Good insight, really, for especially for those of us that drink beer but don't really think about it very much. It's just like, you know, Coke or Sprite or something.
Yeah.
That is what it is, and you drink it. That's sort of been my approach to beer before I started listening to you guys.
Well, to be fair, that's the approach that kind of mainstream brewing encouraged people to take. Like, that's kind of what Coors and Miller Lite and, you know, Budweiser, they're basically like, you know, Coke versus Pepsi versus whatever else. I mean, some would say they do taste different, but fundamentally it's all the same thing. And
right.
I mean, I actually don't drink soda or Pepsi or anything like that. So, but as far as I understand...
That's probably good for your arteries or whatever.
But as far as I understand, most people can kind of drink a Pepsi or a Coke interchangeably, and it's kind of like, you might have a preference, but it's kind of the same thing at the end of the day.
It's and soda.
So, yeah. That's the mainstream approach to beer, is it's beer.
So I have one more question about our porter here.
Yeah, sure.
So porters, at least to me, look very similar to stouts. This tastes a little lighter, like I said at the beginning, to me, but I've had seen darker, richer porters before. Is there like a distinct difference between porter and stout? Because I haven't, if there is, I don't really understand it.
Yes and no. There is a difference. It's a very subjective difference, and different breweries can really make totally different profiles on a, like a wide spectrum between those differences. And basically you can have a porter that tastes like a stout and a stout that tastes like a porter and so on and so forth. As a broad, broad general rule of thumb, in modern brewing, stouts are generally a little heavier, a little heavier in color-wise, like they're a little darker, a little more like jet black, and usually have, at least in the American style, they're a little more hoppy. Like porters can have some hoppiness, but usually it's kind of a mild, earthy hoppiness, while an American stout will have more your traditional, almost like an IPA, where you'll get like really like piney West Coast kind of flavors that are more predominant, while a porter is usually a little bit more on the lighter, maltier, just kind of roasty flavor profile side.
Thanks for explaining that. That's good stuff. One of the more interesting discussions from South Carolina Beer Scouts that I remember listening to was the whole like the IPA episode where you talked about like West Coast versus East Coast and how there's like just different profiles, I guess, evolved from brewing epicenters that didn't communicate at some point.
Oh yeah, yeah, that happened. Definitely. And on that note, like, so you can have stouts that are light and not very hoppy, and you can have porters that are a little hoppier. You can have imperial stouts and imperial porters, which are just, you know, amplified, thicker, higher alcoholic, just stronger versions of the same beer.
Hey, we didn't check that, actually. It's the ABV of this.
Now, this is a fun thing on the Beer Scouts podcast. We like to try to guess if we haven't looked, and I have no idea what we're looking for here, if it's even...
I can't find it.
Not every beer bottle...
It's probably was on the six-pack when I bought it.
That's true, yeah.
You can take a guess, and I'll tell you when it's probably, if you were right.
It's probably like 5.5% to 6%, I'd say. Probably 5.5%.
Okay.
On that note, porters generally are a little lighter alcoholic-wise. They're in like the 5-5.5%, while a stout can be a solid 6%. It's very subjective, and it can vary. But yeah, there's no hard and fast rule, just broadly, stout's a little heavier, a little hoppier. Porter's a little lighter. They focus more on malty, roasty flavors, while stouts have a little bit more hops to go with that.
Yeah. All right, so I think we've enjoyed our first beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And got a little bit left here. So we're going to get on. We got a second beer to sample later. But this isn't just the beer podcast. We got to get my podcast in as well. And you know something that people agree on the East Coast and the West Coast?
Football.
Is that football is great. Yes. Hashtag transition.
And what pairs better with football than a nice glass of American beer?
So. Exactly. So,
And it doesn't have to be the Coors Silver Bullet or your Budweiser, despite what all the commercials
even
may
that's
say.
What the commercial is, yeah. But Bud Light can with your team's logo on it is still Bud Light, in case weren't sure about that.
And actually, can we take one moment to talk about advertising here? Because there was a famous commercial, and I forget whether it wasn't the most recent Super Bowl. I think it might have been the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and I've seen it since then. But basically, it was a commercial released by Budweiser where they were like, Budweiser, it's not a beer to be fussed over. It's like, it's not a beer that, and in the contrast, they've got like people that look like blatant hipsters, and they're all like sipping their little bottles, and it's like, it's a beer for real Americans or something. I forget exactly what they were saying, but basically it was like taking this huge swipe at the craft beer movement, like it's for drinking, not for critiquing. And that was like the reoccurring theme of the whole commercial, and it's just funny. Like. Honestly, it just sounds like sore loser all over. I mean, obviously, you know, craft beer has been just growing, and it's been taking over more and more of the market from like the big mainstream brewers. And this is just them almost like complaining, like, you're not supposed to critique our beer. You're not supposed to like try to taste it. Just drink it. That's basically like what the theme of the commercial was. So.
Darn millennials ruining everything.
Yes, that is so true. Right. I personally will always get a couple craft beers lined up whenever I watch the Super Bowl. I will, you know, get a nice IPA or something like that. Or if I'm not doing a full IPA, at least I'll do like a craft pilsner, something that's like a light beer but still has more flavor.
All right, so let's we can go ahead and transition into an NFL preview. So we're in the first week of the preseason, and is if you get the NFL Network, you can watch all 65 preseason games, which, as I've noted before in other platforms, kind of sounds like a punishment, but more than a reward.
Yeah,
because preseason is pretty boring, but you do get to see, you know, in the first quarter a little bit of your star players sometimes. Not Tom Brady, though.
Yeah,
yeah. The Patriots didn't play anybody in their first game. So for those who may not know, I don't know if you brought it up on your podcast, Eric is a big Steelers fan. You got family from the Pittsburgh area. So
I was born there and will always be my family's roots up there. Yep.
So I guess I'm just going to open the floor. What do you think about Steelers this year? How do you like their chances? Any exciting roster changes you want to talk about?
Well, I'm definitely optimistic. I mean, the Steelers are always in contention. I mean, they always play well. They've got a lot of talented players, and their home field advantage always helps them. And if it wasn't for those darn Ravens that always make a slugfest, I mean, they're always very good in their division. I mean, I won't even waste time talking about the Browns. And now, the Bengals have been doing well. I still think, for whatever reason, the Steelers, well, I know they've lost to the Bengals plenty of times, but usually it's always the Ravens that actually worry you. They're like, because it's like, you know, no matter how well you play, it's like that game always devolves into just like a slugfest where they're just running at each other. And it's like, you know, always like a 3-point, 5-point. It's like a less than 7-point spread every game. So, but I still think, I think the Steelers are definitely going to win their division this year. I'm very confident of that. I mean, nothing's changed drastically enough from last year that I think they would somehow do worse. I mean, they were doing really well last year. Remember, then it was your Dolphins that that threw them off for a few games, but then they came back strong. And
Jay Ajayi had his coming out party against the Steelers, right. Which I think he was started in like 0.3% of fantasy leagues. Like, literally nobody saw that coming.
Yeah. And also, of course, we were talking about this before we started recording. Like, I don't think the Steelers really would have beaten the Patriots at the end of the day in the
AFC. That was the championship game.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The game before the Super Bowl.
Which, of course, to be fair, the Steelers only lost to the reigning Super Bowl champions in their playoff run. And I feel like they would have done exponentially better in that game had Le'Veon Bell not gotten injured. Because, I mean, he...
And it was like in the first series too.
Yeah, it was
like
early in the game.
Whole game.
Yeah, so I mean, I know they tried to make up for him, but Le'Veon Bell is a phenomenal player. Like, his whole like delayed, I guess, like he does a delayed cut essentially. You'll watch him, he like kind of waits for his moment and then he just runs through there, and it's like cool to watch. It's a unique talent that I haven't seen in any Pittsburgh's other running backs. I mean, coming from the heritage of Jerome Bettis, and
yeah,
like, you know, where the goal is not to be like technical, is just plow through him and keep running. So
Le'Veon Bell was responsible for ending one of my fantasy seasons last year.
Oh yeah,
that game. I don't know if you remember the snow game against the Bills where he ran for like 200
yards,
three or four touchdowns.
I definitely saw the highlights.
He scored 49 fantasy points, which was like more than most of my team.
So to be short, I mean, I'm actually looking at, I just pulled up their schedule on our computer here, and I mean, they've got Browns, Vikings, Bears. That's their first three. I'm comfortable saying the Steelers have handled that. Then they've got the Ravens, and then the Jaguars, which for whatever reason, also historically, the Jaguars have always given the Steelers some trouble. I don't know why, because I mean, no disrespect to the Jacksonville team, but they're not considered anything exceptional.
No.
And
I mean, they're still bortling around.
Yeah.
Anyone might have seen the soundbite. Head coach Doug Marrone was asked how many times a game do you want to throw the ball? And his response was zero.
I did not see that.
So they drafted Leonard Fournette with the fourth overall pick, who's one of the top running backs in the draft for a while.
Yeah.
Well, at least since last year. suspended Cowboys running back number 21 that we might talk about more later.
Yeah.
But... yeah, the Jaguars have a lot of improvement needed.
I guess, long story short, though, I see the Steelers getting off to a good start, and I think they'll carry the division, and we can reconvene when the playoffs start, and we'll go from there.
Must be nice playing the Browns twice a year.
Yeah.
Every season. Yeah, if only.
Yeah.
any concern about Le'Veon Bell's holdout?
I mean, I mean, it's not in the interest of either player to somehow ruin their relationship. I mean... obviously, I understand, you know, it's a business, and you know they want to work out, you know, their contracts and make their money. I mean, that it is a business also, but I'm not really worried that it's going to somehow rupture, you know, their relationship. And I honestly hope that Le'Veon Bell stays around. I think he fits the offensive line that the Steelers have, and he plays well with in tandem with Roethlisberger. I think he fits well with the Steelers offense, and
it doesn't hurt having Antonio Brown split wide as well, because they can't really stack the box.
Yeah, for sure.
It's out of a pick your poison. I can't remember a season where I'll have to do a whole fantasy episode at some point of this, but I can't remember a time when the same team had two of the top three rated fantasy players going into the draft.
Yeah. And also, to be fair, I mean, Le'Veon Bell has historically had trouble with injuries. I mean, that was obviously, we just talked about, a huge factor in the 2016 playoffs, and
he's had trouble with marijuana. As one Twitter pointed out, he burns grass both on and off the field.
I mean, he's young. I mean, he's basically, some of these guys are, still, college age. It's just crazy to look
at. He could be one of the, he has potential to be, an all-time great, probably.
Yeah.
If he keeps this up for several years.
I mean, I'm not remotely endorsing, the usage of marijuana, but, I mean, hundreds of thousands of college kids every day indulge in marijuana, and
hopefully you can just keep it under control. I would rather...
For 10 million, for, not 10 million, but however many millions of dollars, it should be a no-brainer. Stay clean. I mean, you're gonna get your paycheck.
I would almost rather have that problem though than injuries or violent legal trouble type deals some players have. So I think that's solvable. There's also been some talk about the players' union trying to reduce or eliminate the marijuana suspensions, because apparently lots of NFL players do that.
Well, it's also becoming complicated now.
It's legal in some places.
Yeah. So what happens if in your home city it is legal, and so on and so forth, but. That's a separate debate.
Yeah, I'll save that for another episode. All right, so I thought what would be fun to do is, I usually post on my Facebook page my predictions for who's going to make the playoffs, so the winner of each division and the wild cards. I've varied from, I think it was 3 years ago, I got 11 out of the 12 teams right, to last year was just a complete train wreck. So we're going to try to do a little bit better.
We should seriously do a follow-up crosscast in January when the playoffs are all set.
And just look back.
Yeah,
I need to hold myself more accountable this season. I to be fair, I did post at some point last season, my playoff picks were all wrong. But fortunately, Miami and the Giants both made the playoffs last year, although they were eliminated on the same day.
Yes,
which was sad. But so let's go ahead, and I always like to start in the AFC East because that's been really easy to pick for the last 15 years.
15 years.
Tom Brady's still good.
Yep.
So I have the Patriots winning the AFC East because they do basically every year. The only time they didn't was when Tom Brady got injured the first game of the season. The Dolphins won the division.
Which year was that?
I think it was 2008.
Okay.
It was whatever year Chad Pennington randomly was on the Dolphins.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, I do remember seeing that now, yeah.
So, and then they got smoked by the Ravens in the first round. But at least they made the playoffs.
Those pesky Ravens.
Yeah. I assume you're going to agree with me there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. All right. Patriots, AFC East. Mm-hmm. You've got them... For 12-4,
I put 12-4.
Your estimate. I mean,
I've stopped picking teams to go 13-3 or better because every time I do it, they end up losing 5 or 6 games, and I look stupid. So.
We can debate that, but I mean, there's no debate in my mind that the Patriots. So.
Yeah,
and even in a scenario if Brady were to get injured, I mean, he is starting to get older, and if he takes a bad hit, he could see him get injured. But I mean, they still have a lot of other star players.
They're very talented. They're well coached. Also, just the other teams in the division aren't that good. The Jets are a complete mess.
Oh, yeah.
And the Bills traded Sammy Watkins, and they weren't that good to begin with.
And of course, I mean,
Miami's got Jay Cutler now. So.
Yeah. And there was those games where Brady couldn't play, of course, because of the whole suspension thing that he had. And so they went
14-2 last year.
I know. Yeah. So case in point, they've got a lot of talent.
If you are going to pick someone to go better than 12-4, probably should be the Patriots.
Yeah.
All right, so I think I know who you're going to take in the AFC North.
Yes, I mean, I'm confident the Steelers are going to take that 11-5, something like that, yeah.
All right, I'm going to become unpopular now. Hopefully I'll still get to drink the second beer later. But so one of my surprise picks for the year, I'm taking the Cincinnati Bengals to win the AFC North. And this may sound kind of ridiculous after they were very mediocre last season. And I don't really have anything bad to say about the Steelers. I think the Steelers will be fine and will make the playoffs and could easily win the division. But the Bengals were very good, made the playoffs several years in a row before last year.
Mm-hmm.
And their offense was injured all the time last season. So they went from, they were missing Tyler Eifert for the first 7 or 8 games of the season. And then he comes back, he gets to play with AJ Green for one game, and then AJ Green gets injured for the rest of the season. And then Andy Dalton went down in like week 13. So by the end of the season, they had like AJ McCarron throwing the ball to Brandon LaFell. It was like their, and also running back Giovanni Bernard tore his ACL. So now at this point,
it was a fluke. I'll give you that. Last year was a fluke.
They definitely should be more talented than that.
And I'll make this comment that I actually, if I were to pick another team that wasn't the Steelers to win the division, I would say the Bengals. Because really, the Ravens just, like, what they're good at messing the Steelers up. Like, that's what they do is they throw, and the Bengals too, actually. I mean, the Ravens throw off everyone else in the division, but then they don't actually win the division that often.
They usually give teams tough games.
Yeah.
I remember they had a very close game with the Giants last season. Even the season where the Patriots almost went undefeated before the Giants won the Super Bowl. Yeah. The only game the Patriots almost lost was against the Ravens. That, like, if not for like a weird false start penalty, they would have won the game.
That's what they're good at. So I would say my second choice for the division would be the Bengals. So
The Ravens have had a ton of injuries in training camp already, though. They've lost running back Kenneth Dixon.
Yeah, that's
Dennis Pitta, tight end, is hurt.
And Flacco is just coming off an injury, which, you know, he may be fine, but
we get to ask the age old question: is Joe Flacco elite? If you don't get that reference, please visit sportspickle.com. It'll be a good, like, 10 minutes every day.
I've seen this.
Crockett Gilmore is hurt, too, for the Ravens. And, like, the Browns will win more than one game this year. Like, I thought they actually had a very good draft.
That's their one benefit.
They finally stayed disciplined. Like, they didn't go just take the highest-ranked quarterback just because he was the highest-ranked quarterback. Like, they took Myles Garrett, who's probably the most talented player with the first pick. And then they worked on offensive defensive line. They didn't like every year it seems like they would just go get a random quarterback and he would fail because they just didn't have talent on the rest of the
roster.
Yeah,
that's not going to click with the rest of the
offense. So I mean, I think they're probably only going to win four games or something this year, but like at least I think they're going to be moving in the right direction. Like if they continue to draft well and make better organizational decisions, they could be relevant in a few years, hopefully. For their fans' sake.
That's all they can hope for,
But anyway, so I'm going to take the Bengals. AJ Green and Tyler Eifert combination, I think, is really potent. And they still have Jeremy Hill, and then getting Giovanni Bernard back, as well as adding their second-round draft pick, running back number 28.
Number 28.
I'd explained this to Eric before, that we don't... Players associated with crimes such as domestic violence don't get referenced by name on my podcast. So, but that guy they drafted in the second round, he is very talented. They're going to have three strong running backs, two strong receivers. I think their defense is fine. It's not like exceptional, but I think it's good enough, and they're going to surprise us here. Moving on to what I think is one of the most interesting divisions, the AFC South. I think you could legitimately pick any team other than the Jaguars here.
Yeah, very, very true.
I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans to squeak it out this year just at 9-7. I think it's going to be a pretty competitive division. I'm worried about Andrew Luck's health and the Texans' quarterback situation. We're just like, I don't know what we're going to get out of Tom Savage or Deshaun Watson. It's actually like the Titans are probably the safest bet to go over 500. What do you think?
I'm picking Colts. Now, the Titans are good, but... I guess, like you said, it does come down to whether Andrew Luck is healthy, if he plays well, and I think he will. I guess
that's if he starts week one, which like is possible, but it's up in the air right now. Like if he starts week one, if he plays like 14 or more games, the Colts can probably win the division.
Yeah.
I guess just based on recent history, I'm betting against that because it hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah.
But obviously, I don't want anyone to be injured, so I like both of those teams. I think they're fun to watch.
I would say that if the Colts take the division, and the Titans are a good wild card.
Definitely possible. It really depends on like if the division is so weak again. Because last year, I think the Texans were 9-7 as well. Maybe they got to 10-6, but there wasn't a lot of good records in that division. But you would think if you get to play Jacksonville twice a year, that's a good start. But anyhow, AFC West also I think an interesting division. Chiefs, Raiders, Broncos, all pretty relevant teams. Just the Chargers look like a mess.
Yeah.
Aside, they're just going to hand the ball to Melvin Gordon. He's going to score like 22 fantasy points every game, and they're still going to lose most of the time because they don't have a defense.
Well, I definitely think the Raiders are going to do really well. Again, what caveat being everyone stays healthy. But yeah.
David Carr was phenomenal before he got hurt.
I actually don't think I watched a Raiders game last year, but I remember just seeing like they keep winning. I would notice in the background like, wow, they're doing well. Like they were on a hot streak, and I was like surprised to see it. And then of course they had injuries and kind of fell apart from there. But I think that the Raiders are going to repeat how as well as they did last year and then make the playoffs.
And hopefully actually get to compete in the playoffs. Because that was one of the saddest things, watching the Chiefs just run all over them in the playoff game. Yeah. I think it was the Chiefs. Whoever they played against beat them up in the playoffs. Like, without their quarterback, they were pretty lost.
Yeah.
I have the Raiders as the last wild card after the Steelers, but I'm going to pick the Chiefs to take the division. I really like their defense. Travis Kelce is becoming a superstar. Alex Smith has a lot of weapons to emerge in the second half of the season. I guess I probably shouldn't say his name either because he had some issues with that. I don't know his number, though. I'll have to work on that. He wasn't in my show notes. But yeah, so you have the Bengals and the Chiefs as your wild card. So we have the same six. Or we have five of the six teams.
Yeah, it's really just,
so we just have the Titans and the Colts different.
And compared to last year, I mean, we're going to obviously drop the Dolphins out of contention for this year. But then, otherwise, it's pretty much the same. I mean, you got the Raiders. And then I guess we're swapping out Texans for Titans compared to last year. But
I do like the Texans long term. Like, if I were buying stock in NFL teams, like, you'd buy low. I think the Texans in, like, 2 years are going to be a powerhouse for a while.
But I don't see the Dolphins.
I don't think it's going to come together
anywhere close.
I don't think it's going to come together this year for the Texans.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move over to the NFC, and we'll start with the NFC East. And I'm going to make the same pick I make every year, regardless of how ill-advised it is. I'm picking the Giants because I always pick the Giants.
And actually, I'll agree with you. I mean, they are a good team. They contend well.
Their defense was phenomenal last year.
I didn't watch much Giants games. Actually, the only Giants game I watched was when they lost to the
Packers.
The Packers. Yeah, I watched that one. I watched that one actually at Bourbon down in a. I actually remember this very clear. I was at Bourbon on Main Street here in Columbia, and I was drinking I think it was like the Rausch beer from Beer Keller, which is a nice smoked beer that's really rare style to find. But
nice. I like how you worked that in there.
Well, no, that's what I remember. I was sitting at the bar watching Heather and I. We just went out for that. We just figured, hey, let's get out of the house. We went up to Bourbon and we watched the game. And Heather likes to rag on the Packers, and so that's a long story. But
that's funny. I actually remember what I was doing. I was, for the weekend, I was in Louisville, Kentucky, at the Magic the Gathering Legacy Grand Prix with some friends, the last one that I went to, actually. And I flew back into Greenville, because Columbia was super expensive that weekend, and then, like, it had snowed all weekend in Louisville. It was, like, 10 degrees and stuff. Like, it was the coldest I've ever been. And then I landed, couldn't find my car, because there are two garages that look exactly the same, and I spent much time traipsing around the wrong one, got really frustrated. Gosh. Finally found my car, and listened to the Giants get this shellacked by the Packers on the radio. That wasn't a good day. The Dolphins had already lost to the Steelers, which I saw Matt Moore's crucial interception during my layover, so it really wasn't a pleasant travel day. All right, so it's cool you're taking the Giants. I'm not sure if that's... If I had to put money on it, I probably wouldn't, but that's what I'm hoping for, at least. NFC North, I think we both like the Packers.
It seems like they're
the clear favorite.
Definitely.
I wouldn't be shocked if the Vikings contend for a wild card this year, but I think the Packers are head and shoulders above everybody.
Honestly, I think...
And we've got 10-6 with the Giants, 11-5 for the Packers.
Yeah. And then obviously for the NFC South, we're both thinking Falcons. I mean, they had just as good a chance of winning the Super Bowl last year. Yeah. I mean, they
really should have.
They had a great first half.
They made a couple
of
bad mental decisions there. Yeah. Should have at least been able to get three more points. And
they almost kind of played like it was their first showing in the Super Bowl. They did good, but then when things started going haywire, then they kind of
They really panicked.
So.
There is an interesting trend of like Super Bowl losers struggling the next year.
That is true. That is very true. I've seen that happen for the Steelers.
If somebody wanted to pick the Panthers or the Bucks, I wouldn't be like completely against that. I'm gonna go ahead and pick the Falcons. They are like very talented. Great. Those two great running backs, Coleman and Freeman.
I'm going to say our three most secure picks for the entire playoffs is Patriots, Packers, and Falcons. I mean, I feel like any other team would be kind of...
Those are probably, I think Patriots and Packers are, like, slight.
Even more than Falcons.
But, I would probably put Falcons third on that.
Yeah.
And the West, we're going to take the Seahawks.
Yeah. Seahawks.
Okay. And then I've got the Panthers as a wild card. I should have the Cowboys as the other one, but I don't, because the heck with them. I'm picking the Arizona Cardinals to surprise David Johnson, maybe the best player in the NFL. We'll see if he is the he almost was the first person in NFL history to have 100 100 yards from scrimmage at every game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And he got injured at the last game of the season, so it couldn't happen. Like, he was going to break the record for sure.
Gotcha. Well, I'm going to go ahead and still I'll go with Panthers for wild card, but then I am going to go ahead and say Cowboys. Yeah. I mean, obviously, as of today, we saw that number 21.
Yes.
Is
Cowboys running back number 21. Six game suspension for domestic violence.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to hurt them. That's what's going to drop them from winning a division to now just contending for wild card. I mean, because I feel like I did see like one or like maybe two Cowboys games last year, and like they needed him. He's what enabled the rest of the offense, where like he could run in there, always get guarantee like a few yards, just enough to
kind of. A lot of that is their offensive line.
Yeah.
But, I think that like Prescott is going to regress a little bit. Like he was exceptional last season, and I do think he's a quality NFL quarterback. I'm not excited about the Giants having to face him for the next 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But, he's like, I think he's got to throw a few more interceptions. Like, it seemed like his turnover numbers were like extraordinarily low, especially for a rookie. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little regression to the mean there.
And honestly, I think they'll do well for the second half of their season once they have number 21 back. But
yeah,
I think that's what's going to keep them there in contention for wild card, is that they'll do well the second half, but they're gonna struggle, I think, without him. At least for like they might figure out a way to do well without him, like after losing two or three games up front.
Yeah,
but although I don't know who they're.
Well, the first game is against the Giants, so okay, I'm hoping
I think the Giants will propel the Giants.
Yeah, if the Giants lose that game, suddenly like the winner of that game has a huge balance of power shift immediately.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our NFL predictions. Let's pick a Super Bowl winner and loser. We didn't rehearse this part.
No.
I forgot to tell you.
That's okay. I can tell you what... Well, we all know what we want to happen.
It's okay if you pick what you want to happen.
Well, I mean, I don't know... Well, I'm going to say this, and this is going to sound like what anyone's going to say. I don't think the Patriots can do it again. I mean, I'm sure they're going to play well, but I don't think... Because they almost lost this past year.
They did.
And they had a couple close games, you know, throughout the season, and... I don't think the Patriots are going to win again. They might make it there, but I don't think they're going to win again. As far as who that does put as our in the victory slot, to play it safe, again, Packers and Falcons, I think they're both solid contenders. I would like to think that if the Falcons made it back, they would probably play with a little more maturity and self-control and actually make it happen. I think if the Falcons make it back, they take it home. Now they don't make it. I think out of the NFC, I think the Packers would be the next best choice, of course. So I could see a Packers Steelers rematch, which we had. Mm-hmm. That was like, I forget what year it was that they.
Yeah, that was like maybe 2009. I think it was 2 years after the first time the Giants
won.
Yeah,
yeah. So I could see a Packers Steelers rematch. That's actually a very realistic scenario.
Okay.
And I could see, and I mean, of course, as a Steelers fan, I'd love to see the Steelers win it. But I could see that game go either way. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is phenomenal, and. What's the I'm blanking on the name of their star wide receiver. He had like the
Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, they've got
that guy killed me in fantasy last year. Yeah. Like, I played against him every week that he went off.
Yeah. So I'm actually this is gonna be my prediction. I'm gonna say it's gonna be a Steelers Packers rematch.
Okay.
Oh, I'm gonna say Steelers.
Okay. I'm going to take the Packers over the Patriots. So I like your analysis of the Falcons if they get back, but I don't think they will. Like,
and that's fair. No.
It's so losing the Super Bowl is so draining. Like, we've just seen the trend has been going on for so long that I've just like, I don't believe that it's a fake anymore. Like,
yeah.
It's not the Madden curse. It's not like random.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just playing that many games and then having a shorter off season and everything. Like, I think that weighs the team down.
Now, obviously we both think they'll make the playoffs, but they won't run through the whole playoffs.
I think they'll probably they might even make it to the conference finals. It would be interesting if they played the Packers again, actually.
Yeah,
because they just destroyed the Packers, which surprised a lot of people.
Which, of course, the Packers might take some revenge and play better. And,
So, the way that the Packers finished last season before that loss, like, they won 8 in a row, and they just looked like they had something going real good going on there, and a lot of their players are back. So, all right, so that was fun NFL preview. Season starts, I believe, September 10th. So, get your popcorn ready. It's gonna be fun.
I'll make one bonus comment. I think if they bring Le'Veon Bell into the Super Bowl with the Steelers, I think then that might give them the edge over any other.
Can avoid injuries. Yeah. And that's what's fun about football is I think that these predictions are hardest for football than for any other major sport.
That's for sure.
We kind of knew, I don't follow much baseball. Like we kind of knew going into the baseball season that like the Nationals, the Cubs and the Dodgers would probably be the best teams. And those are the three teams leading the NL right now, you know? And then same with, like the Red Sox, the Indians, some people didn't see the Astros, but like most of the division leaders in baseball right now are the teams that we guessed that would be at the start of the season. Some of them haven't been dominant all season. Like they were behind for a while. The Cubs were bad for a while and figured it out recently. But, I think, football is probably the least predictable, maybe hockey, but football is definitely, there's a lot of parity. You can see teams like Miami come out of nowhere and make the playoffs 1 year for some reason, and then they go back to being bad. You know, those things happen for most teams, like other than the Browns and the Jaguars. Sorry, yeah. We just pick on them a lot. I'd love to see those teams be good, by the way. Like,
oh, of course,
for football. I wouldn't put money on it, you know?
Yeah. And at least the Browns have a legacy they can look back to while the Jaguars don't even really have that.
1998, Mark Brunell. They made the playoffs.
That's true.
They made the AFC Championship game.
Yeah. Well, regardless of whoever wins or loses or how the season plays out, I'll be drinking lots of good craft beer along the way.
I'll probably be joining you, given that Jay Cutler is now the quarterback of the Dolphins. So, and it's good to know that we'll have good beer regardless of his... likely barrage of turnovers.
Miller Lite's not going to do the trick. Get some copper tail porter or something to help.
Yeah. So we're going to wash down transition here into our second Florida beer. But, you know, in honor of Jay Cutler becoming the newest Florida man, we've got to share a couple stories of this is a recurring segment on my show here is that instances of Florida man in the news. So you're probably familiar with this. About it. Yeah. So.
And I see it in headlines. It comes up, you know, just on the news, like
Florida. And it's in large part because Florida has like no access restrictions on its police records. So I think a lot of these stupid crimes happen elsewhere, but don't make the news because like the press isn't entitled to the information or whatever. So Florida is kind enough of their mishaps. We've got a couple stories. Our first one is Florida man is charged in theft of a rare deer. 18-year-old Eric Damas Acosta, at least spells it differently than you, so that's good, of Miami Gardens, was caught with protected deer in a car. He pleaded not guilty to federal charges of violating the Endangered Species Act. Him and 23-year-old Tumani Anthony Young of Tamarack in South Florida, I believe, were arrested after a deputy found three key deer.
Like, where were they even stealing them
in their
from?
Car during a traffic stop.
Like, where do you... It's not like...
Usually you think like people get pulled over during a traffic stop and it's like, oh darn, there's marijuana in their car and they get arrested. Usually you don't see three deer. That's kind of unusual. One deer was euthanized because of a broken leg.
Well, no kidding. They just like shoved him onto the back of a car. Like, oh gosh.
Key deer grow to the size of a large dog, according to the AP. They're only found in the remote Key West island chain.
Huh.
We'll have to see. I don't know what kind of penalty that comes with.
Ridiculous.
All right, your turn.
All right, well, now we've got... I'm just going to read this headline. Wait, let me read the entire headline. Florida man drives burning car, then shoots at it.
Yeah, that sounds like something that would happen in Florida. This is from the Palm Beach Post.
A Florida man remains in jail after police said he kicked a car that was on fire, drove it around the block, then got out and shot at the burning car.
I love the, like, one-sentence summary. Like, they always give you the... This is... what happened in a nutshell, and it always sounds
it gets worse. So the car was apparently owned by the man's girlfriend and he was driving it before it caught fire. Okay, I'm trying to figure out how the car caught on fire, but
they're not very clear. No. It sounds like they like got out of the car and then they woke up to seeing a fire.
Well, they woke up specifically. It says here the driver was banging on his cousin's door and said, hey bro, grab the water hose. Yes, because
that's gonna put out a fire. Grab that fire extinguisher.
When the hose wouldn't reach the driveway where the blue Cadillac was burning, he allegedly kicked the car, then got into the car and drove off.
It just drove the burning
like,
car.
Like, not worried about, you know, the gas tank exploding or anything. Like, and then he parked the car in front of a residence. He fired a gunshot into the passenger door.
He's apparently a convicted felon, which is awkward.
He faces two charges of weapons possession, by a convicted felon in one charge of firing a weapon in public.
See, if he hadn't shot the door, all of this would have been okay.
Which
the car just would have burned down and they could have collected the insurance money or whatever.
I can't understand how you, like, if you're thinking, oh, the car's on fire, if I shoot at it.
If I fire a burning projectile into the fire, obviously it has to stop.
Yeah,
that, okay.
I can't even understand the logic, but...
This is on a lighter note. Florida man strips off pants while fleeing after robbery. A Florida man ditched his pants while attempting to flee the scene of an alleged crime. Brandon Meredith, 25, of Cape Coral, I think that's near Palm Beach also, is accused of walking to a 7-Eleven around 3 a.m. On Tuesday morning, demanding money from a cashier, claiming he had a gun, but never proving that he actually had one. This is in Fort Myers, actually.
He then pulled a beanie over his face and was wearing a long sleeve shirt and sweatpants.
Later, his shoes and sweatpants were found abandoned. Meredith was found a short time later without his pants. Arrested, charged with attempted robbery, and held without bond. I guess it's not indecent exposure because he was still wearing something, but it would have been funny.
Okay. Oh, and let me make one correction. He actually was wearing a beanie pulled over his face, so he didn't.
He didn't put it on.
Yeah, that's how I interpreted. Like, it's like, okay, thanks. Yeah.
The guy was in to rob the bank. He's like, oh crap, I didn't put my mask on.
Oops.
That's something that would probably happen.
Better late than never. No.
But anyway, let's ignore the stupid things of Florida and go enjoy our other beer.
Yes. Okay.
Also, I looked up the alcohol by volume on the porter.
Oh, yeah?
What was your official guess?
Okay, well, I was saying 5.5 to 6. I'll split the difference and say 5.7.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's 6.2, according to their website.
A little higher, okay.
A little bit higher.
Not drastically.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, before we officially pour this this Florida beer, I did want you to try... This is Wicked Weed's Napoleon Complex Hoppy Pale Ale, so it's... I guess, for those who may not be aware, there's a basic, at the basic level, there's a pale ale. Then the next level of hoppiness is what they call an India pale ale. And then above that, there's this broad category that's called, like, either imperial or double IPAs, which is...
I saw one of those at Crafter Draft, yeah.
So, and all of these beers are known for their hoppiness, and they're all, like...
Hopefully we're not insulting anyone's intelligence, but, like, well, hops, we're talking about, like, the plant that
gets
into the beer. Yeah, they're not, like, jumping around the table or something.
Yeah. Yeah, hop flowers, yes. which look like small pine cones, basically. Yeah. So this normally would not be as hoppy as an IPA, and it's probably not going to be as hoppy as the one we're about to open, but it'll still have a good bit of hoppiness to it, and so... You certainly do not consider yourself a hophead, and
no.
you tend to drink beers.
like lagers and porters and ales and stuff. Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see what you think of this, because this is like the base level of like classic American craft beer hoppiness. This was like back in the 80s when craft beer was really getting started. It started with just pale ales, like the famous Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which is still one of like the most famous, most like best selling pale ales in America. That was. Many people would say it was one of the original craft beers and kind of...
This one's got a little more foam.
Yeah. And again, a nice proportion to it. It's kind of a clean... And so for usually for
it
beer...
It affects the color, right?
Yes.
How much hops are in it.
Yes. Well, actually, color is more a factor of the malts. Like a pale malt will give you more of a paler. Now you can throw a lot of hops in there that can sometimes impact the color. But hops more are like a flavor and aroma.
It smells like ale to me. I don't know.
This one has a little bit more like a citrus tropical.
Yeah,
I'm
definitely catching
more fruit,
like
than
a little orange or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, this isn't like overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
Like what's the IPAs tend to be, and that was something I wanted to ask. You guys did a whole episode on IPA,
mm-hmm.
India Pale Ale, but my question has always been, it's like I don't naturally like have the acquired bitter taste. Obviously, like IPAs are a huge part of craft beer. Basically, when I went to the store before I came up here, I was like, I'm definitely getting an IPA, and then what else am I getting, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, they are what defines American craft beer is mm-hmm. the IPA. It's usually, like, most... If there's a craft beer brewery, like, you know, 80% of the time, their best-selling flagship beer is an IPA of some sort, so...
And so I've been wondering, like, how do I make the jump from, like, lighter ales into IPA?
Gotcha. So how do you, like, basically acquire the taste?
Right, so that I appreciate it, because usually... I'll have like a couple, you know, a few sips of IPA and then not want any more because I'm just like overwhelmed with the bitter flavor.
Well, I guess my first piece of advice.
I like this though.
Yeah. Well, my first piece of advice was going to be don't start with an IPA. Start with a pale ale. Start with the classic Sierra Nevada. If you're in Florida, I highly recommend the Cigar City Invasion Pale Ale out of Tampa. It's
I think we got that in our grocery stores.
It's yeah, and actually it's on the shelves up here in South Carolina too. We've I can't remember if we actually featured it on our podcast yet. We might feature it now and do our own Florida special once I get the rest of my fellow beer scouts with me. But Cigar City is a really well-known, reputable brewery. They might be the I have not looked this up, but just by reputation and also by the fact that I've seen them around up here, I think they might be the biggest, best-selling brewery in Florida.
That sounds very possible.
I could be wrong, but I think, because honestly, when I think Florida, I really just think of two brands. I think of Cigar City and Lucky Buddha. Those are like the two that I knew of before having ever traveled to Florida. So yeah, I would start with a pale ale, and once you're kind of comfortable with that flavor, then maybe try to move up to an IPA. And honestly, I think that's basically how craft beer and how the American IPA got its start, was people started drinking pale ales and they wanted something new and stronger. And so then like West Coast IPAs kind of became more popular. And now we've just seen the progression continue to now double IPAs. Right. And I was actually, our last episode the most recent episode we did was on double IPAs, and we were joking, like, what's next, triple IPAs? Are they just gonna like keep just getting more crazy with, you know, how much hops can we possibly
what's
fit?
Double relative to the regular one? Is there just twice as many hops? Actually
this is this was something we talked about too, is how it's really not an accurate name because it's not literally double anything. one of the questions one of my fellow beer scouts asked in that episode was, if it's not double, what is like the percentage? And I said it's honestly like a 1.25 or like, you know, 1.3 kind of increase over a basic IPA. Like, it's stronger, but it's not doubled. It's not substantially stronger. It's just amplified, but not doubled.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think anything's literally doubled. Now, sometimes they'll say we literally put double the hops. Like, if they used, you know, 4 pounds of hops for their first batch, they might put a solid 8 pounds of hops for a second batch. Like, it could be, but it does not refer to alcohol, because usually an IPA is like in the 6 to 7 range, and a double IPA is can be in the 8 to 9 range. So it's stronger, but not ridiculously stronger. And
coming soon to a craft brewery near you, quintuple IPA.
I mean, seriously, I mean,
2027.
But another one of the criticisms of the name is just not very imaginative, that it
should be like extreme IPA or something that sounds cool.
Well, the one term people also use instead is imperial, because just imperial has this connotation of being stronger, you know, it's just a more extreme version. But even then, you know, it's just a title that people make up, and it's whatever sticks. So,
yep.
So yeah, just start with a less hoppy beer, and if you find that you want to move up on the spectrum, then switch to something else. And I'm trying to think if there's any other main.
So you don't have to like rush. You don't have to like immediately like every type of beer. I think that's sort of those of us who aren't really into craft beer very much, I think we see it as like different. I use a soda comparison again, but it's just like you have different flavors of soda. You have, you know, Coke and Sprite and Fanta and all those things. Like, we sort of see ale and lager and stout as all these things. It's just like different flavors of beer, not so much as like a progression. Like, there's a cool at pizza joint where I used to do trivia in Columbia. Sam Adams actually has like a beer spectrum picture, and it goes from like the really light to the stout.
Yeah.
And I forget what order they're in, but like, I was like, that was eye opening to me when I saw that. And I was like, oh, it's not just like a orange and cherry and grape or something like that.
So
there's it's just a progression.
And it can fit whatever the occasion is. If it's like a brutally hot day, you probably don't want to have something that's super bitter. You want something that's just kind of light and sweet and crisp. And if you're at home and it's wintertime, you probably want something that's kind of dark and kind of warming if it's got some more booziness to it. So it can really fit the occasion. Also, I was going to make a point that you can try pairing a bitter food with like a really rich food. Like, honestly, some of that is usually kind of like a greasier food, or like, you know, French fries or something. Like, something that has a lot of, you know, thickness and, I guess, not greasiness, but just like a lot of thickness.
Like starch, maybe.
Well, like, I guess something that's like well-oiled, something that really like sticks to your palate, because the bitterness from hops will naturally clean all that off your palate. It's a nice, like, if you're eating like beer-battered fish and chips, for example, like a nice crisp, bitter, like Pilsner or IPA, like something that's got a lot of bitterness to it, will kind of clean your palate and not make you feel like, oh gosh, I'm just eating fried food the whole time. Like, it'll actually complement like a dish like that pretty
very
well.
Interesting. And as good tips on the podcast
and
today.
And one other tip is that usually it's not advised to pair spicy food with IPAs, because for whatever reason, if you're eating like, you know, like a jalapeno, you know, taco or something, that like if you put in an IPA with that, the bitter, like the hops of the hop oils of like the IPA are actually going to react with like the capsaicin from like a from like the spice, and will actually make your mouth even more like inflamed.
Oh wow,
like,
interesting.
Like IPAs are not a spice, like a spiciness quencher. Like,
wow,
yeah,
I wouldn't guess that.
A nice actually, it's actually probably why like they say to pair that that porter with a barbecue brisket, because like a porter is kind of like a soothing, kind of sweet, thick flavor, and that'll kind of counteract like a kind of aggressive barbecue flavor. So
yeah, good stuff. Something else we should mention is that so we had between the porter and well this pale ale or the hobby pale ale and the IPA, we had some pretzels to cleanse the palate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you should only do when you're like really switching between macro beer types, or like should we be doing that again before the IPA?
Since it's basically going to be the same style, like switching from a porter to like a hoppier beer is more of a shift that you probably want to clean your palate between that, but to switch from a hoppy pale ale to an India pale ale is not going to be too drastic.
Very similar.
So.
Okay.
So actually I'd be curious now to get your impression of this having just tasted the
right.
regular pale ale to see if you notice a stronger hoppiness to it.
And so this is Funky Buddha Hop Gun.
Hop Gun, yes.
Which,
nice.
We know that the Beer Scouts like puns. It's kind of a sub-theme in their show, so I figured you'd like this one.
Yes, and that's clever.
We're going to try to pour it into two glasses this time.
Yes. Yes, I'll remember. Here in Colombia, River Rat Brewery recently released the Top Goza, which was also a Top Gun pun.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Totally different style. But
I had to try one of those at some point, the Goza, because I listened to that episode too.
You,
and I've never had one before. It
yeah,
sounds
well,
different.
It's honestly not one that I had much experience with beforehand. But
you got really good foam action on this
yeah.
one.
Well, this has been warming up for a good while. But,
that's true.
But still, I mean, that's okay. I mean, it's still cool to the touch. So
yeah. All right, here we go. Cheers.
Cheers.
It definitely tastes like more mild to me than it just like IPA straight out of the bottle because of what we did before.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a little bit of a citrusy feel to this one
yeah.
too.
And actually almost like a candied flavor to it. Now this is going to be a technical kind of more of a beer nerd term, but this actually almost has a little bit of a Belgian note to it. Like it's kind of got a sweet, like a candy, like a cotton candy or bubblegum kind of flavor to it. Very mild. But
I'll have to look for that.
Let me check the bottle out on this one.
What do we got?
It says, Hop Gun IPA delivers a payload of good old American hops, bursting with the flavors of grapefruit and pineapple.
Okay.
A careful dose of caramel, of smooth caramel malts swoop in to balance out the finish. So, and let's check the date.
Consume fresh.
Well, I don't see a date, but I do see it says it's a 7% alcohol by volume. And this one actually says pour and serve at 38 degrees, so they actually advertise this to be a little colder.
So we're having a...
This is a little warmer.
It's a little warmer for us. I like
but,
it, actually.
Yeah.
This is my best IPA experience. But like I said, probably because we softened up the palate first.
Yeah. I definitely get like a grapefruit note to it.
I can definitely taste that.
Now, what's interesting is they didn't claim for it to be like a... Usually they'll say if they have like some sort of Belgian note to it. I guess what I'm probably tasting is just it's like that caramel, like sugar flavor. Which I would have to say that this is probably an example of what like the East Coast version of an IPA, where an East Coast IPA versus a West Coast IPA generally is more balanced and more malty. Like it's not all hops, which is something that some listeners may not realize, that you know not all IPAs are hardcore super bitter and super hoppy. Like that's more of like the West Coast style, where they throw a ton of you know very strong piney you know bitter flavors. Like little bitter hops that give you like that flavor, and that's not every IPA is made like that. There can be plenty of IPAs that have a lot more maltiness to kind of keep that hoppiness from being too strong. This is a good example of a little bit more balance.
Yeah. So is it good?
Yeah, I like it.
I don't have any context for this because like I've had porter before and I had this one. I was like, oh, this is good. But then like this is the first time I've really had an IPA and been like, this isn't really gross.
So. Well, I'll tell you what, when we open up the next one, we'll be sure to drink it right away so it's at the 38 degrees that they recommended, and I'll let you know if it tastes any more drastically hoppy or not, because it is a little bit more bitter, but not drastically more than the one we just had before. Yeah.
It's definitely, I guess, more bitter. I won't want to keep saying stronger, like that. The bitter flavor is stronger.
So you would, you do say this strikes you as more bitter
than that one? Yeah.
Okay,
but it's not like a huge difference.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this does have a lot of more like that sweet caramel flavor to kind of balance it out.
This one still feels like it's different. Like the porter, I feel like I could drink, you know, all day basically. Mm-hmm. This one, like I'll kind of be glad when I'm done with it, I guess. And like I'm enjoying it for now, but I'm starting to feel, you know, like, okay, I'm only gonna have, you know, one of these.
Gotcha.
Whereas I feel like you could have lots of porter.
I think my palate is to the point where I actually don't taste too much of a difference on the bitterness scale. Like it's a little bit more, but I feel like to me the bitterness is not different enough that I'm just like, I would drink, you know.
And there is a bitterness scale, right?
There is actually a technical unit. It's actually, it's not very imaginatively named, but they have the International Bitterness Units.
And okay.
I don't know the details of how they came up with that scale or how they measure it, but basically on a scale of like 0 to like a reasonable beer, they max out at like between 80 to like 90 maybe, like in that range. That's like the upper limit. So most beers, like most IPAs, might be in like the 50 to 60 odd range. Like a porter's probably like down in the low 20s, like, you know, something like that. Like that one's probably like the 20s. And then like a mainstream lager is in like the single digits. Like a Heineken's maybe like, you know, an 11 or something like that. Yeah. Okay. So it's like 0 to 80, I think, is like what's normal. Now there can be beers that are more extreme, but
so that's the problem, is I drank nothing but Yingling and Blue Moon for like 3 years. And then I was like, oh, there's other stuff out there.
Yeah. So International Bitterness Units, IBUs for short. And you'll see
that's a good trivia answer. I feel like that'll be on Jeopardy someday if it hasn't been already.
And actually what's nice is that a lot of, especially like brew pubs where they brew their own beer on like premises at the restaurant, they'll have like the IBU for like each beer on their menu. Like if they have like a list of like, these are our 6 beers that we have available today, they'll have like an IBU next to each one. They'll say, oh, this one's, you know, 65, this one's 22, this one's 33. And
so that's a really good way if you go to a beer festival or some situation where you're tasting.
Yeah.
To really like give you something, it gives you like reasonable expectations for what you're going to drink, and it kind of helps you evaluate.
Yeah,
I'm assuming.
Now, it's not a foolproof guide. Like, it can also very much depend on the food you're eating, kind of like what I was mentioning before. Like, if it can just depend on the food, that can kind of accentuate or decrease like your sensitivity to the bitterness. And it also, like, you know, there can be 2 beers that are like the same technical IBU like rating, but if one's got a lot more malt to it, that might make it taste less bitter if it's got something to balance it more. So
can you explain like malt versus hops? So
yeah,
like malt is the liquid part and hops is the solid part.
Well, actually,
or is it more complicated than
it's
that?
A little bit more complicated, because like usually you never leave like the hops in a beer. Like, you know, they drop like the little hop cone flowers in a beer, like when they're brewing it, but then all that's filtered out and removed before it's packaged. And so like basically the malt is like the sweetening agent and the hops are the bittering agent. And malt is basically, you know, just when we say malt, it's like malted barley, malted, you know, you can use wheat or any sort of grain that you're brewing your beer with. And so that provides like the kind of bready sweet flavor in a beer, and then the hops are what gives it like a bitter fruity kind of, it provides that half of the flavor. And then to do a little piece of beer history, there's the famous Reinheitsgebot, which is the beer purity law from Germany, which basically the law was that beer can only be brewed with water, hops, yeast, and malt. So those are like the most purists or traditionalists will say those are the only things that should ever be in a beer. Like you shouldn't use any like additives, like, you know,
you shouldn't have any grapefruit notes or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't have any actual grapefruit juice in it. You can get grapefruit flavors from the hops, but you shouldn't add like an artificial, because there are plenty of beers that have like actual fruit juice added in, and that's not, like, some people would say that's not acceptable. That's actually like an ongoing debate, is whether fruit beers are, Actually, we posted this on our Facebook page. There was an article.
I actually read it because I like fruit beers, and I wasn't sure if that makes me like a bad beer taster.
Well, it's a popular debate in beer snobs and circles. So, but anyhow, so like obviously, if you go to those four traditional ingredients, hops, water, yeast, and malt. So the malt is like the bread that provides like the bready flavors like I was just talking about, or like, and if they're like toasted a little bit more, you can get like more of a toasted or a roasted or like a burnt flavor. It's basically like same thing as coffee beans. If you burn a coffee bean when you make coffee, you know, it gives it more of like that charred flavor. It's the same thing with like the little malt like grains. If you toast them dark enough, it'll taste like dark, like a coffee bean. And then the yeast can give off flavors. Like the yeast, of course, is what actually ferments the alcohol in the beer, and that will like when the little yeast organisms consume the sugar and then they release the alcohol and like other flavors like that can impact the flavor of the beer. Water actually can impact the flavor of the beer if it's like depending on the like the minerals that are in the water, like the softness and the hardness will actually impact how the yeast function and how the other chemicals in the beer.
For the chemistry nerds out there, the hardness has to do with usually divalent ions, which is mostly calcium and magnesium concentration in the water.
So. I didn't know that, but So then the water will definitely impact your flavor, and then the hops, of course, will add bitterness. And some hops can be kind of fruity. Like, this is definitely, like, more fruity flavors, like that grapefruit and citrus. But then there are also hops that are very earthy and honestly almost taste like soil. That's the best word I can use to describe it. It kind of has, like, a...
I guess it tastes better than it sounds.
I mean, most British hops are more kind of earthy. They don't have the rich kind of tropical note that a lot of American hops have. And then, of course, the hops supply the bitterness. So,
okay.
All those. So, and usually the malts and the hops balance each other out. They like the hops provide more sweetness and the malts provide more bitterness, and they counteract each other and balance each other.
Very good. Thanks for all that insight. I've learned a lot today.
Well, I'm glad.
I've got to wrap up soon here, but wanted to touch on one other thing. So, I've wanted my podcast to be more. I originally wanted it to be like part sports and part gaming, and it's kind of like devolved into mostly being about sports and stupid news. But I know you've been getting involved in a pretty interesting newer tabletop game, so I thought maybe you could just give us like the 10-minute version of your game.
So thanks to a good friend of mine, Adam Newton here in
Adam's cool. Shout out to Adam.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to get him to listen to some of these podcasts. But, yeah. So he introduced me to this game called Star Wars Armada, which if anyone out there that has any experience with tabletop games, you probably know what Star Wars X-Wing is. Like, there's this famous tabletop game called X-Wing. It's by Fantasy Flight is the name of the company that actually, you know, makes these games. And X-Wing is, like, more popular because it's shorter to play. Like, you can play a game of X-Wing in, like, an hour from what I understand. I actually skipped X-Wing and went right to Armada. But, X-Wing is like where you literally, it's like a tabletop game, and literally each ship is an individual, like X-Wing or Y-Wing, or for anyone that watches Star Wars and knows, like, you know, there's TIE fighters and TIE bombers, and then you can get like all the special characters that, you know, like Boba Fett and stuff like that, and they each have their own ship.
So you can customize, or you choose either Alliance or...
Yeah,
you
know, I was
at Alliance or Horde, Warcraft, Rebel or Empire.
Yeah, it's always Rebel or Empire. Further
based on that.
Yeah, so basically you can have the Rebels on one side, and you can have, like, you know, an X-Wing and a Y-Wing, and you can have, like, Luke Skywalker and, you know, Biggs Darklighter as your pilots, and then on the Imperial side you can have Boba Fett flying Slave One, and who else, like... Dengar flying a fire spray. These are all. We're both nerding out right
nerding
now.
Out.
But yeah.
Can you be Admiral Akbar?
Not in X-Wing. Not in X-Wing. But in Armada, the Admiral Akbar is an admiral and one of the most dangerous and deadly admirals on the Rebel side.
Like
I've lost to many to many an Admiral Akbar fleet.
Nice.
Like Admiral Akbar's special abilities. He like strengthens your shots out the flanks of your ship, so it's basically like your broadside is more dangerous. So instead of trying to like fly directly into your enemy, you always try to like kind of form a broadside barrage where you can kind of scoot sideways and shoot out like the side of your ship. And so, but yeah, Star Wars Armada is basically a grander. It's like a fleet level version of X-Wing. So most people played X-Wing. X-Wing is individual like starfighters fighting each other. Armada is, as you can kind of guess, it's a whole fleet of ships fighting each other, and it's tabletop based. It's like maybe, you know, 6 feet by 3 feet. It's, so you need a full table to play it, but you'll have, like, you know, four or five capital ships. Like, if you watch the movie, like, if you're on the Imperial side, you'll have, like, a Star Destroyer, and then a smaller version of a Star Destroyer. And then there's, like, a small ship that's called the Raider, which is, like, a small, like, fast attack ship. But they're, like, capital ships in the sense that they're, like, large ships that they can shoot out, like, all four sides. Like, they can shoot it, like, to the rear and to the flanks and to the front. And obviously, most ships, like, they're weaker. If you can get behind the enemy ship, you have an advantage because they don't shoot as strongly out, like, yeah, the backside. And some ships are stronger on their flanks, that they, instead of sailing right at you, they'll try to, like, point sideways and shoot out the sides. And then there's also, like, squadrons of small starfighters. So, like, you'll have your capital ships, and then on the Rebel side, there'll be, like, you know, the Corellian Corvette, which is the famous ship that, if you've seen the opening of the original classic 1977, yeah, yeah. So there's, like, the Star Destroyer that's chasing the little Corellian Corvette. Both of those would be considered capital ships, and obviously a Corellian Corvette is much weaker, and you would need, like, five of them to counteract one Star Destroyer, right. Which...
So how do you... What, like, limits the size of your army?
In this yeah, point? So this so there it's point-based, and every ship has a point value. So it's kind of like... I mean, I've never played Magic. I know you're...
I was actually about to make that comparison.
Because from what I understand about Magic is, like, you build your deck, you build, like, your army, so to speak, before you even go in to...
Right.
And it's the same thing in Armada. Like, if you go to an Armada tournament, you have your fleet all picked out, ready to go, and you play that same fleet through, like, the whole tournament. Uh-huh. And, so it's like capped at 400 points, and, like, each ship has a point value, so it keeps everyone balanced. So you could try to go heavy, like, you could pick, you know, two or three Star Destroyers, and that could cost you, like, 300 points right there, and then you have maybe just enough room to put some, like, special squadrons in there. And on the other hand, the Rebel guy could pick, you know, like, four Krillian Corvettes and, like, two, like, Mon Calamari cruisers or what they can. And you could try to customize your fleet to make it a bunch of smaller attack ships or a bunch of...
So you can have, like, a couple of tens or, like, a lot of sixes, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and, like, basically, yeah.
In Magic, those who play might recognize this, but you have... it's sort of like mana costs in Magic. So the more powerful spells that you cast in Magic generally cost more mana, so they take more time to be able to cast them. So yeah, you just put expensive, only 7 mana spells in your deck, you'll like, lose before you get to play anything.
Yeah, which is... both a pro and a con to the game is, like, no matter how good your strategy is, like, if you don't have a good fleet designed, like, it's not going to help you at the end of the day. Like, you need a well-balanced and well-designed fleet up front, which is fun because it's, like, you spend half your time just picking out, like, oh, if I combine this ship with this ship, this will be a nice, you know, they'll work together well. Like, different ships have different speeds, different ships have different abilities. Like, you can say, oh, well, I have this one ship that... Like, there's one special ability that one ship can shoot after it moves. Usually you always shoot before you move, but there's one ship that can shoot after it moves. So it's like you can kind of hold him back in reserve and then launch him ahead real fast and then, like, put a big hit on another ship and then scoot out before he can get shot again. And so it's definitely got, like, a...
There's two different... there's almost, like, two different games. Like, you have to
design your...
You have to enable yourself to play the live game. Like, if you... build your fleet poorly, you'll be at a big disadvantage.
It's and honestly, you know, it's funny, it's almost like an NFL team where you need, like, because, like, and what's one thing that's cool about Armada is, like, you can get all these special characters. Like, Boba Fett has special abilities, Darth Vader has special abilities, Luke Skywalker has special abilities. Like, they're all characters. And, like I just said, admirals, like Admiral Akbar has a special ability. Then on the other side, there's, like, Grand Moff Tarkin, and actually, it's funny, my admiral, I play Imperials, I have an Imperial Navy. And my admiral choice of actually Admiral Ozzel, which, if you remember in The Empire Strikes Back, he's the first admiral to get choked to death by Darth Vader. But for whatever reason, I actually play well with him. He's actually one of the cheaper admirals, and because even the admirals have points, so, like, you can have a really powerful admiral, but then that leaves you less points to spend on your ships, or you can have a really cheap admiral, but then you can spend more points on having better ships. So it's kind of a trade-off like that. And
A lot of customization.
And then
it makes for good replayability most of the time.
And like, every, I don't know how often, but every so often they'll release a new wave of new characters and new ships available. So it, like, they keep it expanding. I mean, it's kind of like Warhammer in the sense that, you know, they keep just releasing new armies and new units to play with. So
sounds pretty interesting. If somebody wanted to get involved in their local you know, Star Wars Armada community? Did you just go to your like local game store, or is there a lot of online support for it?
Well, on I know here in Columbia we have a Facebook page. It's like the SC Midlands Armada Facebook page. And then of course here in Columbia, and you would know this, there's Firefly, the famous Firefly Toys and Games out in towards Harbison, and then that computer store, which is a little bit farther up.
I've been there for Magic.
And then here in West Columbia, there's I forget what the other that one's called, but there's plenty of, like, you know, any place where you would play Magic or D&D or Warhammer, you'll see Armada pieces there, like, for sale. You'll see like the Armada ships for sale, and then usually you'll see someone playing it. So, but yeah, it's a nice, fun themed strategy game. It's very strategic, like, and the average game takes 2.5 hours. I think at tournaments it's capped at 2.5 hours, if I remember correctly, and it'll take every minute of that. Like, if you're not kind of working quickly, it can take 3 hours. Like, it's a solid game. It has a lot of replayability, and you know, every battle is different, and there's also like different missions you'll play each time, so you can design your fleet to play a certain mission very well. And then try to like make sure that mission gets chosen, like, for the game. Or you can look at the other person's fleet when you're getting ready to pick your mission to be like, okay, this fleet would not be good at this mission.
And there's even more strategy to it.
Definitely.
And I'm not talking to my glass, so probably made a bad echo.
No, I've done that before, don't worry. And what's, for example, like, you know, after each movie comes out, they'll usually release like probably some new ships, because like after the Rogue One, they released the Hammerhead Rebel like ships. Remember, there's like the scene at the end of Rogue One where they like push the Star Destroyer into like
the force field thing.
So they released that ship based on the movie like a few months later, and that's kind of a cool little like fun thing. And then they'll release new characters based on characters from the movies and stuff like that, so it's a lot to geek out over. And it's fun. I mean, the one of the few downsides to it is kind of expensive. Like, I bought the base of my Navy like secondhand. Like, I bought, like, it wasn't, so I didn't have to pay full price for it, but it can be expensive. Like, the Imperial Star Destroyer costs like $50, and that's one ship. The cheaper ships are like 20 or 30, but still that adds up quickly, and it is expensive. But I guess compared to Warhammer, I think it's not that bad.
Yeah. You have your base too, it's like you're probably not going to spend a whole lot between games.
No, and you can, and like, you know, the squadrons are a good bit cheaper, like the little tiny X-wings and TIE fighters and TIE interceptors and stuff like that. Like, they're cheaper, so you can. And I actually don't mind playing with the same fleet over and over. Like, I don't change my fleets up too drastically too often, so.
Do you think Jay Cutler is going to run into any TIE interceptors this season?
Well, yes, I think he will have some interceptions.
This is probably a sign that the show's almost over.
Yeah, if you're into Star Wars and you're into more, I guess, honestly, hardcore strategy games, and you like something that you like having a lot of customization, and if you're up for playing for a solid 2.5 hours, Star Wars Armada, I definitely recommend it. And I'll tell you one thing I like about it is the big ships all come pre-painted, so unlike Warhammer where you have to physically paint and prepare the ships yourself.
That was always a big deterrent for non-artistic folks like myself.
Yeah, and I know for some people they love that. I'm with you. I didn't like the idea of having to, like, I don't want to go through all that work just to play the game. That was my perspective. Exactly. And like, now the little tiny like TIE fighters and Y-wings and X-wings, they're not painted, but they come in like the Imperial ones come in like a neutral gray, and then the Rebel ones come in like a neutral, like off-white color. So you don't need to paint them if you didn't want to. Some people do, and that's your right. Some people paint over like the paint scheme that comes on like the Imperial Star Destroyers and stuff like that, which, hey, if you enjoy that, go for it.
A lot of people do that in Magic too. Like, they'll like pay people to like make artistic alterations to their cards.
Really?
Some people get like really detailed in there.
I didn't know that.
That's definitely a customization's a big part of what some people like about gaming, I think.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, any final thoughts? I think we covered everything on our notes here.
Yeah, I am very excited to see football come around. I think, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but you know, here in this house, we don't pay for cable. We don't pay for like satellite TV or anything. I've never, we don't watch enough TV for it to be worth the money. But what I did do is I went out, like last year I bought an antenna for like, which,
yeah,
it's I read an article, I think in like, I don't know if it was like The Economist or Forbes or something, where like people of like younger generations don't have a concept of like an antenna TV. Like, yeah, it's something, it's like a foreign concept to them. And they're like, people just don't know about it. And
it's something in black and white movies.
Yeah. You can still watch like, and now they're like HD channels. So really I take out the antenna that I have for my TV. I plug it up for the NFL season. I watch the NFL season. And then I watched the Stanley Cup this past year, but then really otherwise I unplug it and put it away. And it's just enough that I can watch, you know,
you can watch all the games except for Monday night, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
And usually I can catch, you know, the Steelers and, you know, any other game that's like local. Like I can all the Panthers games, all the Falcons games are usually on in this area. So it's a nice cost efficient way to still be able to enjoy the football
season. Florida, we have obviously we have three teams. So we have the Dolphins, the Jaguars, and the Buccaneers. And most people in my hometown, Melbourne, are either Dolphins or Bucks fans. Just because I think it's part because Jacksonville's not very good, but I think it's largely because Jacksonville came later. They're the most recent expansion. So a lot of people had their team already.
Gotcha.
But we always have issues with there's always two games. Usually 1 o'clock is CBS and a Fox game, and if all three teams play, then like one of them doesn't show up on the TV. So like everyone's always in Melbourne is grumpy. Oh, the Jaguars took out the Bucks game, or the Jaguars took out the Dolphins game.
That almost creates a rivalry.
Yeah. But we actually got an HD antenna a couple of months ago because like we cut cable because it was costing way too much money. And but I wanted to watch Jeopardy. That was actually why we got it. Okay. So, but now I can watch football too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great. I find it's a great way to, you know, make a small budget cut and still be able to enjoy, you know, the stuff that you'd ever like that I would ever watch at home, which is, you know, sporting events. There's stuff that you can't get on Netflix or Amazon or something like that. So
yeah.
But this was fun.
This was. Thank you for joining me.
I actually really. I'm serious. We need to like follow up in like, you know, a few months and see
check on our predictions,
how these predictions come out. And
they weren't, we didn't have like a ton of major differences, but we'll have to see who gets the edge on the AFC North and South, and then we'll see what happens with the wishful thinking on the Giants probably. But
yeah,
all right, so until next time, this is Dr. Dom
and this is Eric Blake representing the South Carolina Beer Scouts.
Thank you for listening. Have a great day.
Yep, see you next time.